Oh, no, great. Not yet, but you got to hear this, 30 seconds. It wasn't recording at all.
It's not to me when I, it's not when I should begin.
Okay.
Question one. My name is Florence Whitaker Gross. The Gross is my husband's name and was added after I left UW. My present address is 3034 North 49th Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53210. Question two. I attended UW during the summer sessions of 1928, 1929, 1930, and the fall semester of 30-31. Question three. I was an English graduate student. Question four. The high school I attended was not a high school, but a preparatory school on the campus of Oklahoma Agricultural and Mechanical College, now Oklahoma State University, located in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Question five, since I lived in Stillwater and funds were low, there was never any question as to where I would attend college. Prep students were expected to pass on into the college upon accumulating enough credits, and this I did without fanfare or graduating ceremony. I received my bachelor's degree from Oklahoma A&M while I was still 18 years old. I was 19 soon after, and started teaching in high school that fall. Question six. When I was an undergraduate student, I had a little French teacher named Mary Lockhart. In a conversation class, she extolled the beauties of the surroundings at UW-Madison, and especially the pleasures of life in the French house there. Ironically, when I went to UW, I had to take so many courses in my English major field that I never even saw the French house. From here on, I shall have to be very selective in the questions that I answer. I am now 80 years old, and my memory for specifics is often hazy. I'm glad this is not an examination. To be sure, I kept a diary, but I destroyed it when my daughters came along. Question nine. I drove to Madison for the summer session, accompanied by my mother and my younger brother, then a child. Question 13. I did have a faculty advisor. I can't remember his name, but I remember that he did spend considerable time with me and was scornful of the two generalized courses I had taken in my undergraduate days at the smaller institution, predicting that it would be impossible for me to get my master's degree in the equivalent of a year's study. I proved him to be wrong in this. Question 15. Women students wore dresses and men wore suits and usually ties to class. It was before the days of slacks and jeans. Question 17. In graduate school, too much was at stake for students to misbehave. So far as I know, there were no discipline problems. Question 19. My classes were all co-ed. On the surface, treatment was the same for men and women. However, I still remember with a touch of ire a man classmate who was not, I was sure, any smarter than I, whose grade topped mine a little because Professor Dodge took his remarks more seriously than he did mine. Question 21. Classes were fairly formal, yet such an interchange as this as the following was possible. The subject was Chaucer. I had just answered correctly a question posed by Professor Leonard about one of the more salacious tales. The professor, eyeing me, "You always seem to know the dirty stories best." "I, perhaps that is because you emphasize them more." He laughed. Question 23. Most of my teachers combined lecture and discussion. Question 25. Professors always called us Miss, Mrs., or Mr., plus our last name. All of them, if my memory serves me right, asked that we use only these titles in addressing them. Question 27. Course expectations were usually dictated early in the course. I remember one journalism teacher who used to repeat the semester assignments every class period. This got to be rather boring. Otherwise, she was a very good teacher. Question 29. My recollection is that most of my classes met for an hour three times a week. Seminars were 1.5 hours long. Question 31. Most of my professors obviously made an effort to be accessible to students. I remember sitting on the grass on a summer's day while William Ellery Leonard lay near me and plied me with questions, mostly not about schoolwork. I was shy and not very articulate, and I felt his boredom. Dr. Rowe cordially invited students to his office and even to his home to discuss any problems, scholastic or personal. Question 35. In graduate school, the final grade had to be an A or B for credit to be given. I was a grade addict. Seasoned teacher though I was, I cried when a few courses yielded Bs instead of As. My mother shared this feeling with me. She had been a teacher too. My father just had a general desire for me to do well. Question 36. Shall I describe my final oral exam for my master's degree? My examining board contained two professors that I had had. Nevertheless, I was very frightened. All the vocabulary of literary comment and criticism abandoned me, and I was reduced to the simplest wording. However, most of my answers were correct, as they should have been, since I had taught English and American literature for 8 years. Dodge, who had never recognized me, though I had had two courses with him, declared it was the best oral he had sat in on for a long time. Question 39. Final grades were mailed, thank goodness. Question 41. My most interesting professors were Rowe, Leonard, Mrs. Sackerson. I cannot describe exactly how they influenced me, except that they heightened an already passionate love of knowledge in general and literature in particular. Question 42. Rowe was my favorite teacher. The course I had with him, Carlyle, could have been very dull, but he made it fascinating. Handsome, gentle, scholarly, with a gift for words, I idolized him. Moreover, he appreciated my mind and my writing. Mrs. Sackerson was my voice teacher. Once, trying to get me to loosen up, she commanded, "Scream!" I answered, "I can't." She replied, "I believe you." I suppose even modern-day students know about Leonard, the poet, with his phobia. I have an autographed copy of his two lives, and I wrote some poetry about him, which I shall send along. Question 52. I chose to live off campus because I was an adult and accustomed to independence, also because I had little time for socializing. I'm sure my judgment was correct in this matter. When my mother was with me, we lived with the Abels and did light housekeeping. Later, I occupied a room at the Hanleys with no kitchen privileges, though sometimes I cheated by using my hot plate. Otherwise, I ate at the Union. There was a curfew on the time of our coming in at night. Women living there conspired with each other to evade this ruling. Question 64. Though I had little leisure, I especially enjoyed the Dixie Club's cookouts on a blazing fire on the shores of Lake Monona. I also recall one stop terrifying in retrospect, for I am a very poor swimmer, when I poled a canoe on Lake Mendota while a boyfriend swam beside me and frequently came aboard for rest. Question 65. Otherwise, the Memorial Union was the center of my contact with other students and my relaxation. I listened to Hawa Kaya play the piano in the smoke-filled Rathskeller and attended dances there. Question 66. So far as I know, all foreigners and ethnic groups had equal access to the Union. Being from a fairly provincial background, I was intrigued by different cultures, I had a Filipino boyfriend and delighted in unfamiliar dialects, of which there were many. Question 69. I had little time for movies, but I do recall seeing the first sound movie there in which Al Jolson sang Mammy. Question 71. I did read the Daily Cardinal and enjoyed it. Question 73. So far as I knew, drugs were not a significant factor in the lives of students. Alcohol, tobacco, and sex certainly were. Sex habits were not so blatant as now, but I'm sure sexual participation was pretty widespread. Question 82. Religion had always been a big factor in my life. I attended a Baptist church in Madison and sang in the choir, which Mrs. Sackerson directed. However, it was a later course in comparative religion that first shook my faith. Question 91. My answer to this and several following questions is that I had no time for social activities other than those which I have described. Question 95. Especially during the first semester of 30 and 31, I was aware of a strong communist trend among students and teachers alike. Being from a conservative Republican family, I was affronted by the sneering at patriotism and typically American values. I was a capitalist because I owned a car and was putting myself through school. Question 99. I believe that Glenn Frank was president during my stay at the university. I approved of him but did not know him personally. Question 104. My career goals were to continue as a teacher and to be a better one and to teach in college. Question 105. My education at UW did definitely help me to achieve those goals. Question 106. I taught steadily from 1922 to 1965, except for the one semester at UW and 3 years off at different times for maternity leave. I did not get paid during those years. From early 31 on, I was teaching in Milwaukee at West Division and Washington High Schools and Mount Mary College. After retirement, I had a small success as a freelance writer. Question 107. I would give UW-Madison high marks. I have a grandson there now, graduating this spring. However, I deplored then, and still do deplore, the increasing narrowness of the field in advanced degrees instead of broadening courses. I felt there was much about world literature that I needed to know, but never had time to pursue. And this is even more true, I understand, concerning the doctor's degree. Additional comment. When I first arrived at UW, Charles Lindbergh was the hero of the day and had just been awarded an honorary degree there. Wisconsinites were quick to inform the outsider from Oklahoma that UW had previously kicked Lindbergh out for failure to keep up his grades.